Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dory Smith.
Oh dear, how I need one sweet letter from you. I'd love to read one sweet letter from you. You know that you
Benny Goodman with Louise Tobin in the 1939 piece, One Sweet Letter From You. Millions of Americans have been writing letters to their elected officials. Those elected officials don't always find such letters sweet. But people continue to comment on the Iraq War, the Afghanistan War, the Patriot Act, the use of the National Security Agency to spy on Americans. Atomic veteran Stephen M. Osborne may be one of the most prolific of these writers.
I exchanged emails with one of my own senators when I asked her about what is an impeachable offense. She says, I understand your concerns and frustrations with the current administration. I have significant concerns, blah, blah. However, disagreeing with the president is not sufficient reason to remove him from office.
Osborne was in the U.S. Navy stationed off the Bikini Islands in 1956 during Operation Red Wing. He watched what the military told him was a 20-megaton bomb go off in a real-life version of the film that would be made years later called The Day After. The people of the Marshall Islands were ravaged by the effects of this U.S. nuclear testing, and many suffered with radiation poisoning and died. Others were permanently displaced to new locations after their homes were determined to be uninhabitable. Initially, Stephen Osborne was concerned about being court-martialed if he did a lot of writing or speaking out about the nuclear weapons testing. He bided his time, he said, but he also read everything he could get his hands on about history and the U.S. Constitution. Not long after the Bikini Islands tests, when Osborne's hair started to come out in clumps and his gums bled, he began to also study nuclear weapons and war and the health consequences of major accidents at nuclear facilities. And so his life became set in the direction of critiquing our nuclear age, writing articles, op-ed pieces, and poetry to document the dangers we all face. Over the years since 1956, he's written countless letters to his representatives. Representative Barbara Boxer read his piece, There Must Be No Day, on the floor of the House of Representatives on Hiroshima Day, 1984. Today we go over some of the letters he's been writing more recently and explore one of the biggest issues in the American nuclear story, the lack of ability among the American people to adequately understand these weapons and the risks we face.
I was writing an article on Chernobyl right after it happened, and my son came in and he says, Hey, Dad, he says, I just listened to the weather report. This is for the first time in history. It says we're going to have rain with traces of radioactive iodine. That was halfway around the globe, and the cloud was still moving, and that was just from a minor thing. That wasn't from a nuclear exchange. So you figure that these clowns that think that nuclear weaponry is acceptable, they don't understand. And there's not, you know, the majority of these people, hell, Bush has never said, I don't know how old he is now, but I don't know if he was born when the nuclear testing was going on. But people today have no firsthand knowledge, and I hope to God they never do, of what nuclear weaponry is like. But if, as a, for instance, we have some 3,000 missiles that are all nuclear MIRV, nuclear tip, that can hit with pinpoint accuracy anywhere on the globe, you talk about weapons of mass destruction. Most people are not completely nuts, even the Koreans, though we like to portray them, are. I don't think that the North Korean leadership is totally insane. But let us say, as a for instance, that somebody in Korea said, well, you know, we have 5 missiles and we have 5 nuclear warheads that we think will reach the American West Coast. Let's bomb America. Well, before those 5 missiles were halfway across the Pacific, you know, we would probably have a counterstrike going that would turn North Korea into slag. And So whether or not they did manage to take out five cities in the United States, North Korea would cease to exist, and the cloud and nuclear detritus from that would probably render much of the Northern Hemisphere uninhabitable. At any rate, there would be tremendous amounts of nuclear-related diseases and birth defects and so forth, and we would suffer from that for probably generations. Nuclear warfare is not an alternative. It's not, we just can't do it. And this push that Bush is making for his bunker busters and his deep-penetrating nukes and this, that, and the other thing, it is not an answer. We cannot go back to that nightmare. We thought people worked for a generation to try and eliminate this scourge of nuclear weaponry, and we finally thought we had it under control. We had the mutual nuclear reduction program going on, which at least reduced the threat. It was, both sides still had enough nuclear weaponry to destroy the world 10 times over, but at least they were reducing it. The anti-ballistic missile treaty and the Star Wars treaty had reduced the arms race. Now that Bush is pushing so hard for his multi-trillion-dollar boondoggle, which is the Star Wars reproduction of the Star Wars project. So Russia is now feeling threatened, and China is feeling threatened. So they are starting to up their missile defense and their missile, trying to develop missiles that can get around the missile defense system. And so he has single-handedly managed to bring back the Cold War. Another thing I thought was interesting the other day was I read that Russia and China have settled their differences. They've had border differences and so forth, and they finally settled all of that because they are looking at a threat to both of them, or what they perceive as a threat to both of them, and so they're going to work together to defend themselves, which we will look upon as a potential for attack and so forth, which makes them liable for a preemptive strike from us under the Bush doctrine. So, it's total insanity. You can't come up with anything that's rational on this. It is crazy. But they're going ahead and doing it, and it's causing the world to destabilize.
You can read more from the Atomic Veterans and from Steve Osborne at www.aracnet.com. In the years between 2001 and 2005, Russia, under Vladimir Putin, has militarized. The U.S. has pulled out of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And some of Steve Osborne's other concerns about the Bush administration have proven to be well-founded. Questions about a new nuclear arms race are topping the headlines about Russia. And on December 26, 2005, the political editor of The Scotsman wrote the headline, "Putin's show of strength triggers fear of fresh nuclear arms race." Fraser Nelson says, quote, "Vladimir Putin has sparked fears of a new arms race between Russia and the United States by deploying a nuclear ballistic strike force system that officials made clear could penetrate U.S. anti-missile defenses. On Christmas Eve, the Russian army activated a new fleet of Topol-M missiles that can fit a nuclear warhead and travel 6,000 miles, changing trajectory to foil any enemy interception device." And that was quoting Fraser Nelson, the political editor of The Scotsman. China announced that this was the year of Russia and China. Meanwhile, Vladimir Putin started a fuel war with the Ukraine, raising their rate on natural gas. And in a strange solution, the corporatized Russian government has formed a corporate partnership with the Ukraine. And with Asia and the Eastern Bloc negotiating their powers within the Eastern European Union, there are sure to be significant challenges to the world community at the UN during 2006. Americans who, like Steve Osborne, have been concerned about the direction that the Bush administration might go in are now looking toward a curative measure through impeachment. Some are calling for congressional hearings. The ACLU has asked for an investigation of the use of the NSA to spy on Americans. A diverse array of critics of the Bush administration seem to be agreeing that the White House must be contained through the next 3 years if George Bush is to remain in power. I caught up with a worried but still committed Steve Osborne during the holidays.
Steve, you've been watching this war with great dismay over roughly 2 years' time now, and it hasn't gotten better. It's gotten consistently more and more costly and more complicated. And recently you've been writing about comparisons between the U.S. and the Bush administration and some of the worst regimes in history. Why don't you talk a little bit about these very strong and difficult feelings that you're having?
Well, since last September especially, I had some recovery time from an operation to give me a new knee. And being somewhat of a student of history, I sat down and I reread what I could stomach of Mein Kampf. I reread Walter Scheurer's Rise and Fall of the Third Reich and Berlin Diary, plus some other things. And the thing that really boggles my mind is the number of things that we are doing, that this country is doing, which almost exactly parallel what the rise of the Nazis did. I mean, everything, even the business of being able to disappear people and have them, even their relatives, it's illegal for their relatives to ask where they've gone. It's illegal for anybody to tell where they've been taken. That was a policy that was put in to increase terror in Nazi Germany, almost in the same words, that their relatives would have no right to know where they'd gone, or would not have the right even to ask, with the fear of being disappeared themselves. And this would increase the terror and make the populace more subservient, because they'd be afraid they would be disappeared. And, you know, we're gradually doing that with these Patriot Act and Patriot Act 2, if it gets voted in. Our Bill of Rights will be gone, and the government has the right, whether they do it or not. I have friends who, you know, they regularly chide me. They say, "Hey, Steve, have you been hauled off to a secret place yet?" And then I say, "No, because I'm not effective. Nobody's listening to me." But, you know, if the potential is there now, this government has the potential to disappear people that don't agree with them, if they feel that they're threatened. And just having this there, having this power that they seem to be getting, and watching the Bill of Rights, you know, just literally being written out of existence, you know, that's what makes the United States the United States. The Constitution is not an old piece of obsolete parchment that needs to be set aside, as some people tell me, because of modern times. That was what made the United States the United States. That's what made us, for many years, a model of emerging nations, you know, to copy our Constitution, because it was such a brilliant and all-comprehensive document that protected the people. And now it's all being set aside by this gang of thugs, and to me, that's the biggest tragedy of all.
So many people are going through what we're going through. They're traumatized by the changes in their country. And I think we should give voice to that in some ways, to just talk about how upsetting it is, but at the same time, too, what it's done to us as people, that this administration, like some before it, have just run roughshod over us as if we don't matter, you know?
Well, of course, when this whole mess started out, I wrote an article which I called, George Orwell, Novelist or Prophet, in which I laid out what was proposed at the time. I wrote this back in, I think it was in 2002, where I saw our country going under Bush and what he was doing. And, people said, "Oh, no way, not in our America, this couldn't happen." And one of the things I notice now is that some of the name reporters and name writers are now coming up, you know, saying that we're living in an Orwellian nightmare. So now that we're there, people are beginning to recognize this. But, you know, we've got our thought police. Homeland Security is a thought police. It surveils everybody. You can just take it for granted that everything you do and say and every transaction you make, is going into a file someplace to be hauled out at some other time to cause you problems, or you know, to do something to make your life miserable if you don't happen to be going along with the party line. And that's not really the United States I grew up in.
Now, how has it worked contrary to your understanding of the America that you thought you'd be living in at this point in your life?
Well, I'm an ardent constitutionalist. I think that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights are probably the most important secular documents that have ever been written. And what I've observed, especially during the past 6 years, is that the administration is just treating them like waste paper, like toilet paper. They ride right over the top of them. And the president and the Congress all take an oath to support and protect the Constitution. And shredding the Constitution is not supporting and protecting it. And the oath is a very short one, but a very poignant one, where you do swear to uphold this. And the whole idea nowadays seems to be for the government to just say, well, times have changed. We don't need the Constitution anymore because we need a fascist dictatorship here. So we will protect you from all evils as long as you will knuckle under and do exactly as we tell you, or else. And that's not the United States I grew up in or intended to die in. Well, I think the figure that they'd come out with was that there were like 20,000 people that were under surveillance. And now the FBI, now they've come up with, I just sent my name in to Dean and the Democratic Steering Committee because they filed a Freedom of Information Act to ask for all of the legal opinions and so forth that the Bush's lawyers might have come up with in order to say that surveilling the American populace was legal, considering the fact that after Nixon they passed laws to prevent that happening. But apparently the FBI now has orders to go out and look into anything that they want that they might consider as being subversive. So they're looking at labor unions. They're looking at church groups that are against the war. For instance, we have our First Amendment protections, which should allow us to demonstrate. And every time Bush shows up someplace, anybody that is considered as even possibly, anti-Bush or anti-Bush policies, they get to do their demonstrating 4 or 5 miles away in some walled-in stadium or behind barbed wire, and they're forbidden to talk to the press. Now, that I would expect in Soviet Russia. I would expect it in China. I would have expected it in Pinochet's Chile, which we supported. But I certainly wouldn't expect it here in the United States. And yet during the last election and whenever Bush roams around, that's what happens. Anybody that even has a T-shirt, that says, why are we in Iraq? They are told to take the T-shirt off and to leave the area. And to my mind, that means that democracy just went down the toilet along with the Constitution. And it's time that we rescue it and bring it all back.
Barbara Boxer is looking at this latest news about the NSA and President Bush's release of them to go ahead and spy on Americans as something that might be an impeachable offense.
Pardon my French, but it's way past about damn time. The impeachment movement has been going on for a long time. I exchanged emails with one of my own senators when I asked her about what is an impeachable offense. When I got back an answer from her, she says, thank you for contacting me about this possibility of impeaching President Bush or other members of the administration. And then she goes on and says that Congress can remove and so on and so forth. And then she says, I understand your concerns and frustrations with the current administration. I have significant concerns, blah, blah. However, disagreeing with the president is not sufficient reason to remove him from office. Oversight of the administration is one of Congress's vital roles and so forth. Well, I got a little bit ticked on that because I said, why it's not disagreement or it's not, peek at the president's operations. It's his complete disregard for the Constitution and for the legal government of the United States. So I sent back, and I said, on September 27th, we sent the following query to you. We have not received an answer. This is my second time here, and I sent it off to both of my senators and my congressman. And I said, please give us the requested information. It is very important to our understanding of the operation of the United States government. What does it take to make a high crime and misdemeanor? For Clinton, it was not keeping his pants zipped in the Oval Office and then being embarrassed to admit it. For Bush, lying to the American people in Congress, getting us into a quagmire in Iraq, spending billions in tax breaks for his wealthy friends at the expense of the welfare of the American people, assenting to torture of prisoners, unilaterally discarding treaties, which are the law of the land, vacationing while disaster approached, then overwhelmed the Gulf Coast. Please explain to me how any of these things are not high crimes and misdemeanors and how an open flyout ranks them. We would really like to know. To date, I have not received any answer from that query, and I think it's a very legitimate query. You know, apparently the tipping point for Barbara Boxer is the fact that, he's authorized looking into our mailboxes and our bank accounts and so forth. The Patriot Act itself is blatantly unconstitutional, and everybody skirts that, and they look at picking little pieces of it up. But basically, the Patriot Act is unconstitutional. If you read the Constitution, there is a way to amend the Constitution, and it has been done a number of times. I forget exactly how many amendments there are now in the Constitution, but it can be amended, but you can't do it by legislative fiat.
Now, heading into the holiday season, the president worked very hard to get the bump that he did get in his approval ratings. And a lot of this involves just saying again and again that we are bringing democracy to Iraq, that there's no way that we should be pulling out because we're needed there to protect freedom, democracy, and the Iraqi people.
Are you saying that the people have swallowed that and he's getting approval again?
Well, his approval rating has risen significantly since he started making these speeches, yes.
Good God, the American people will believe anything. I'm looking right now at TomPaine.com. Dick Cheney's priorities. The vice president is breathlessly rushing home to cast a tie-breaking vote to cut health care for the poor and the disabled. Now, that sums up this government right there.
Now, in your many letters to members of government, to your representatives and others, did you ever feel that you were part of a bigger movement of Americans all writing to these leaders? I mean, has it occurred to you that perhaps there are any number of Americans that are doing what we are right now, talking amongst themselves about the Patriot Act, the war in Iraq, the various kinds of new cutbacks in benefits for poor people while wealthy Americans seem to be getting all the breaks?
Well, I do know that, for instance, Move On has managed to get a lot of petition and letter writing going, and they keep us apprised of what's coming up in Congress and in the Senate. You know, between signing petitions and adding our own 2 cents worth, there are millions of people that are doing this, and I think it's having some impact because it seems to me that the Congress is gradually becoming a little less of a rubber stamp Reichstag for Bush's Fuhrer Act, but it hasn't gone far enough. I understand that not only when did Congress pass this latest defense adjustment bill or whatever the heck they call it, they also voted themselves a nice pay and benefit raise at the same time. Now, that's an obscenity right there. What they get in wages and fringes, there isn't a congressman hurting anywhere. But they'll give themselves a raise at the same time that they're cutting benefits to the military, cutting benefits to the poor, cutting out chances for people that are Katrina victims. The majority of the people in the government seem to be on the I'm for me and I'm for my friends and the devil take the hindmost outlook. And I that's not the way it's supposed to be. I sent off a letter to my various and sundry congressmen and so on and so forth. And I put an article in there, which, if you'd like, I'll read it to you. It's Contract with America.
As I recall, you wrote this letter fairly early on about what you saw as possible breaches of the Constitution under the Bush administration.
Yeah, I wrote it when the Patriot Act was first coming out because the thing was obviously going to pass with nobody reading it. And so I tried to get this published, but that didn't work, but what I said was, I called it the Contract with America. I said the American people signed a contract, an agreement between the governed and the government. It's called the Constitution of the United States. The first 10 amendments to that Constitution is known as the Bill of Rights. as Justice Hugo Black stated, it is my belief that there are absolutes in our Bill of Rights and that they were put there on purpose by men who knew what words meant and meant their prohibitions to be absolutes. Think about it. Without the First Amendment, newspapers could only print the party line or be suppressed. Books and plays could be removed, censored, or banned. We might have to attend the state-authorized religion, or be forbidden to attend any other form of worship, or any worship at all. We could even have a church telling us how to live backed up with government force. We would have no right of public assembly or protest, nor could we petition the government for a redress of grievances. Without the Second Amendment, we would be a completely disarmed populace at the mercy of government troops or security forces. Without the Third Amendment, the government could quarter troops in your home without your consent. Without the Fourth Amendment, the government's security force or military could search your home at will without a warrant, confiscate your papers and property, monitor your communications and phone conversations without your ever knowing about it. Without the Fifth Amendment, you could be picked up, your property confiscated, you could be held incommunicado for an indefinite period of time without legal counsel, and could be forced to testify against yourself. Without the Sixth Amendment, you could be held for an indefinite period without charge and without being told why you're being held. Your trial, if any, could be held in secret without your being able to confront your accusers or examining any evidence, nor would you have the right to legal counsel. Without the Seventh Amendment, in civil suits, you would not have the right of trial by jury. Without the Eighth Amendment, there would be no limit on the amount of bail set or fines imposed, and any cruel punishment could be meted out, even death by torture. Without the Ninth Amendment, any rights not spelled out would be forfeit to the government. And without the Tenth Amendment, the people of the United States would have no powers reserved to themselves. It would all lie with the state. Isn't it tragic that the Congress gave to the executive, through misguided patriotism, an act that would unconstitutionally repeal those rights guaranteed by the Constitution and turn it all over to Homeland Security? Read your Constitution and Bill of Rights, then read the text of the Patriot Act and the proposed amended Patriot Act, and then think about it. So, you know, I couldn't get that one published. Everybody says, oh, you know, that's ridiculous. You know, nobody would ever do that. But think about what's going on now. What do we have? We've got gulags. We've got torture. We've got renditions. We've got the Patriot Act has literally repealed the Bill of Rights, and the government has arrogated to itself, the right to do, to throw out, our rights. And you can see it. You know, I could sit and talk on each one of these amendments and go on for an hour about what's being broken in them. And even the, in the First Amendment, as far as the separation of church and state is concerned, Bush is breaking that down and trying to turn us into a theocracy. And, that was one of the biggest things that the Founding Fathers did not want. They'd seen the results of theocracies in Europe and England, over a period of several hundred years, and there was absolutely no way that they wanted that to happen. They wanted religion to thrive in the United States, however, any religion that you wanted, and they wanted democracy and freedom to thrive in the United States, and they wanted them separate. And we're losing that. With newspapers being bought up by a handful of people, that's very similar to what went on in Nazi Germany. The newspapers that were critical of Hitler, either the brown shirts went in and broke up the presses and destroyed the newspapers, or they were, ordered to shut down, and then the Germans went in and bought the papers and turned them into a propaganda arm. So it's the same thing that's going on here. They've got our wealthy junkers buying up the newspapers and getting rid of the critics and getting rid of any investigative reporting and so forth and just turning them into a propaganda arm of the government. I mean, my God, doesn't anybody read history anymore? Doesn't anybody think about what's going on?
Steve Osborne is a member of Atomic Veterans and Veterans for Common Sense. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. Talk Nation Radio is produced in the studios of WHUS Stores. TalkNation.org for transcripts and discussion.